Ready or not, it's time for the damage report. I'm Brett Ehrlich, here with J.R. Jackson.
I'm ready.
If I'm in for John, at least there's one thing that we can rely on Wednesdays.
That is bagels?
No, JR Wednesdays, also bagels. One thing that you probably haven't noticed yet is that JR's got his awesome mug because his kid's in the playoffs for baseball. Fantastic.
This is from last season, though. He's on a different team this year. I got this mug specifically to embarrass him because he's about the age where she'd be like, oh, I got a pin and everything. Smiling face with those pins. And I wore it around and I was like, I'm waiting for him, like, Dad, stop. And he's like, yeah, that's my face. I was like,
I've created a child with confidence. Totally. He doesn't care so much about what other people think. Oh, my burn didn't work out.
Totally. I was like, I wasted $12 on this pin.
Oh, man. I was always on the Pirates. That's funny that you do that. But we didn't have yellow. It was always like black nylon that I would wear in the Valley at like 3 o'clock in the summer when we played, and I would burn alive. We have an amazing show for you today. We have a guest coming up, Emily Baker White from the Plainview Project, which exposes what police officers say online when they think nobody's watching, though they should know better than anyone that it's public and folks can go find it. She actually did. But in addition to that, we're going to talk about there's one block where we're going to explore what the Democrats are doing and what the Republicans have done when it comes to immigration. Spoiler alert, while we are learning more and more about the separations of children and the inhumane conditions that they're kept in, the Democrats passed the Dream Act. So that's a good thing. We'll see what happens with that. An amazingly stupid interview with your president of the United States where he's in England talking to the ever fantastic Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain. Any morning with Piers Morgan is a bad morning. And then an amazing story that Brooke found about sagging pants in Shreveport and like the police and how they've kind of gone after people for sagging pants in a thinly veiled attempt.
So many thoughts.
Yeah, so we're going to get to that. And in order to get to that, we got to start with our lead story, which is the ongoing saga of Steven Crowder and a Vox reporter named Carlos Maza. Okay, so you may have been following this ongoing saga between YouTube, Carlos Maza from Vox, and Steven Crowder. So Carlos Maza goes by the Twitter handle Gay Wonk. And he had been making videos with his show, I think it's called Strike Through. And essentially, Steven Crowder has just gone after him online. And so Maza put together a highlight reel of all the things that Crowder has said about him. Take a look at him.
Before we get to the video, with our favorite lispy Strike from Vox. It's ridiculous. It's bonkers. You're being given a free pass as a crappy writer because you're gay.
That center line on his little queer graph there. What is
well,
that
now
line?
The graph is queer.
It's violence, filth.
Okay, so the little queer could eat his chips all nonchalantly. It's code for rape, Mr. Queer eating chips on the Vox channel.
So you may have seen that. A couple developments before we get into a discussion. YouTube reached out to him after Carlos posted this and said, we're looking into it. Steven Crowder himself even put out a video saying, essentially, a thinly veiled, please, 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 please don't cancel my YouTube channel. I need it to survive. And so here is the development, which is Crowder is now allowed to stay on YouTube. And here are YouTube's statements that they released publicly saying, thanks again for taking the time to share all of this information with us. We take allegations of harassment very seriously. We know this is important and impacts a lot of people. They continue. Our teams spent the last few days conducting an in-depth review of the video flagged to us. And while we found language that was clearly hurtful, the videos as posted don't violate our policies. We've included more info below to explain this decision. And they continue. As an open platform, it's crucial for us to allow everyone from creators to journalists to late night TV hosts to express their opinions within the scope of our policies. Opinions can be deeply offensive, but if they don't violate our policies, they'll remain on our site. And then the final thing they said is, even if a video remains on our site, it doesn't mean we endorse / support that viewpoint. There are other aspects of the channel that we're still evaluating. We'll be in touch with any further updates. So that's their answer. YouTube on Twitter. What do you think?
Right. I would assume that they would, YouTube would go ahead and also outline the policies that were not violated. Because, of course, that's the first question. It's like, okay, you have guidelines, you have policies. What are those guidelines and policies that were not violated?
Yeah.
right? That would be part of the explanation so people can understand the reasons why you made that decision.
Right. That is a four like tweet response. Mm-hmm. And I think in doing that, it would absolutely expose to us something that never gets exposed, which is YouTube's actual policy.
Right.
I would love to hear them explain it. Just like take me through step by step exactly what you thought and use concrete details. So play that video and tell me why it's not like violating your.
Yeah, because part of what Crowder did when he was in the virtual plea for keeping his channel on was this is the corporations coming after the little guy. The little guy that's just trying to make a living. We employ 10 people and those people's livelihoods are on the line now. And we're gonna fight to the bitter end because we get unfairly treated all the time. And you know, I went through the whole victimization process. So even in that, so as he has his approach to saying we've been done wrong so many times, that's another opportunity to be like, okay, Steven, these are our policies. This is where you have to stay within your parameters. This is where you've towed the line. This is where you've crossed the line. And maybe there's the warning signs. Because honestly, I'm not sure if you mentioned it. Just even when, maybe it was John also, when Twitter or when YouTube said, we're going to look into it, someone said, oh yeah, they're looking into it. No one really took them that seriously for looking into it. It was like, yeah, they're going to kind of put this as window dressing and not do much about it. Now, because also, guys like Crowder, what they've been saying is we've been targeted. They're coming at us for things that we didn't do or say. And his explanation was, hey, he calls himself these names. He was talking in the full compilation of that.
Right.
Bananas, the way he and his another person on the camera eating bananas talked about penises but wasn't calling them those. So I'm not sure if Maza was saying all these things. Did you just repeat it or if you were coming up with them yourself?
Well, his out.
It was disingenuous.
It's absolutely disingenuous. That's absolutely right. He is trying to say, oh, he says the word, why can't I? Well, the reason that like the official academic study is called queer studies is an attempt to reclaim the word that has been used disparagingly in the past. It's just so weird to me. Like the shirt that he wears all the time and actually sells on his channel, Crowder, it says socialism is for F words. And it has Che Guevara with his hand out in what is, in that anyways, the primary reason for him selling that is to go after people based on who they are. And so here's something that Nick Stat wrote on The Verge. He said that Maza also pointed out the hypocrisy of YouTube celebrating LGBT Pride Month by changing its Twitter avatar photos to ones referencing the rainbow flag and promoting a YouTube-financed original documentary called State of Pride. And then Maza turns around and says, I don't know what else the LGBT people are supposed to do. I compiled the clips for them. I sent them everything, publicly begged them to pay attention. It's never enough because YouTube does not give an F about protecting marginalized people, and it never has. So what is YouTube saying when they put a pride flag on their logo? And Google does it too. And I know that Google owns YouTube. But I think that's just a really powerful statement to just say, listen, you're using it in order to get good PR, but when the rubber hits the road, he even called out, you're not just ignoring me, and I don't care about Crowder, I care about YouTube, which is this giant platform, ignoring their own terms of service.
They'll reference you back to the part of their statement that said, even if a video remains on our site, it doesn't mean we endorse or support that viewpoint. That's why they threw that in.
Yeah.
Because they're letting you know, hey, we actually think this guy is garbage, but we can't take it down just because we disagree with them. Now, by the way, that's a principal policy. Sure, the site isn't based off of people that only have like-minded views, and that's not what anybody wants. We're talking about harassment. We're talking about which eventually led to doxing, and which of course then follow up and lead to violence, physical harm, which we know happens in this country. You have to base your policies based off the surroundings that you're involved in. We're in a society that has heightened awareness and fear of marginalized communities. And there's numbers that show it. It's been heightened in the last few years for whatever reasons. You can blame the president, you can blame the people surrounding the president, you can blame our society in general because we got sick of having a president in before that represented that community. Anyway,
that's exactly it.
That's what heightened so much of it, I think was a big part of it. So when you know you're surrounded with that, and you know people have been killed, you know transgender people have been getting killed at a higher rate, and no one seems to care. And this crosses many lines. Homophobia is a thing that crosses all political party lines. There's plenty of Democrats that are homophobic as. So this isn't a partisan issue. So when you know that people are being physically harmed and killed, That's when your policies need to make sure that you don't help promote people that push people to do those things.
Yeah, and then there's been a lot of great journalists that are going out and just highlighting, like, here's what you say, YouTube. Someone from Gizmodo said, YouTube told me that it won't remove videos of Crowder taunting gay wonk with racist anti-gay harassment because Crowder was focused primarily on debating. That was his primary focus. But other people point out, no, it's not the primary focus that's always highlighted in the terms of service. One person posted, and this is from YouTube's terms of service, content that makes hurtful and negative personal comments slash videos about another person. And then the hateful content guideline, which I'm just showing you this because they're talking about a very serious subject and they show a fun little emoji who's wearing boxing gloves and is really upset right now. But in it, they say, essentially toward the bottom, they say that, or based on race or ethnic origin, religion, disability, gender, age, national, all that stuff, and sexual orientation slash gender identity, or whose primary purpose is inciting hatred on the basis of those characteristics. So I just think that's very frustrating. And they should be forced to go out in public and say this is exactly what we looked at and how we balanced it. Or they just need to change their terms of service. And then just be straight with us with what they actually agree with. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Emily Baker White from the Plainview Project, we're going to talk to her about her initiative. We'll be back after this. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time. So, police officers, they have a lot of authority to go looking through your stuff. But what if someone looked through their stuff, specifically the stuff that they put online? Well, that's exactly what Emily Baker White from the Plainview Project did. Emily, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me.
So, the Plainview Project, I know what it is, but could you tell our viewers a little bit about what the Plainview Project is?
The Plainview Project is a database of publicly posted social media posts made by police officers. And the posts are all public Facebook posts that anyone with a Facebook account could see. And the database, which contains over 5,000 of these posts, most from current officers, but some from former police officers, shows a subculture of bias and violence in American policing today.
So when you say a subculture of bias and violence, what kind of stuff that did you find by going through these people's Facebook profiles that you found to, you know, back up that claim?
Sure. We saw a lot of posts, memes, conversations where officers appeared to be endorsing violence against protesters, violence against people of color, violence against people accused of crimes. A number of officers seemed to endorse or encourage people trying to run over protesters with their cars. There were others where they talked about wanting to beat or kill or shoot suspects.
So does anyone, I mean, they're police officers, they're supposed to serve the public trust and protect the innocent. Did any of the police officers, when you were looking through their posts, was anyone on that chain being like, hey guys, this is public, maybe you shouldn't say something like that?
Rarely. We might have seen a couple of those, but there were certainly some people in the comments beneath posts. And that's one thing that's really important to note is that a lot of these posts are posts that then have comment threads underneath. And we have redacted the names and faces of all of the people who made comments who we weren't sure were law enforcement officers. But in those comments, when there was a person that we were able to verify was a law enforcement officer, that person's comment has been included as well. And one of the things that we saw in the comments was you get this sort of toxic piling on culture, which I think social media may bring out in a lot of us, where the first person, the initial poster, will say something that's somewhat violent or perhaps somewhat seems to discriminate against a group of people. And then the post underneath just escalate and escalate. You know, I would have kicked that guy more. Well, I would have punched him. Well, I would have shot him. They all need to be shot. Like there's a sort of toxic feedback loop where these officers seem to encourage one another to talk in a violent way.
Emily, it's JR. So we talk a lot about police violence and the way they overstep their bounds a lot of times. And also then training is brought up, the hierarchy is brought up, the chain of command, the higher ups and what they're doing or not doing or supportive of or covering for. Did you notice, I mean, this is a public database, as you're saying. Did you notice any higher ups from any of these departments having access to it? Or if they did anything about it, if any of these police officers had been reprimanded or fired over any of this?
So many officers in the database do have leadership positions. They're sergeants, some of them are lieutenants, et cetera. But how many sergeants, lieutenants, captains had access to this information, I don't know. Not everyone makes public who their Facebook friends are. So it may be that many more people in the department, even if they weren't engaging in this type of behavior, did see it on their feeds. Often we're friends with folks that we work with on Facebook. But that isn't information that I have. However, a large number of folks in leadership positions do appear in the database for things that they have said.
Yeah, so I was also wondering, so with this, any of the officers in question that have been exposed on this database, have they had a chance to respond, come up with excuses, reasons why they're doing this?
I think a few folks have started doing that on social media. They have not reached out to me directly. I know that departments and the folks investigating in these departments appear to be taking this very seriously. Commissioner Roth in Philadelphia, one of his first quotes to the local paper was, "I don't understand why this level of hate still exists in this country." And that seems like a really from the heart statement. He seems really worried about this. He seems really disturbed by it and like he wants to get to the bottom of it. And statements in other cities have been similar so far.
Has there been anyone who's come out and said, has gone after you for this? Or is it pretty much universally like, we have to do something about this? And when you hear that, do you believe them? Or are you just thinking this is a kind of cover for yourself kind of approach?
We've gotten some hate mail and some trolls, as the internet sometimes will provide. but that's okay. Internet trolls are everywhere. Do I believe them? I hope so. So far, they seem sincere. I think one of the really important things that will need to come down the line is we'll need to figure out, obviously, they're reviewing a lot of information right now. Once they review it, let's see what they think and let's see, you know, what actions have been taken. And one thing I hope, I definitely think we need more accountability within the department. That's very clear from this. But I hope there's also a cultural change. I hope departments look at this and say, all right, not only do we have officers that did something that wasn't good for the department and that wasn't good for policing, but what I want is for officers to realize that this is counterproductive to the job that they're trying to do, right? It's incredibly important what police officers do. They are heroes, they protect us, and we need to know, everybody out on the street needs to know that a police officer will come and protect them in an emergency, no matter what they look like, no matter what their race, ethnicity, no matter how they pray. And one thing that, the thing that worries me most about this whole project is that there may be people out there who don't want to pick up the phone and call 911 because they're worried that a police officer who responds might not be in their corner because they are somehow different from that officer. And I hope departments take that to heart and really try within the reforms that they take to incentivize community policing, incentivize policing that gives people that faith rather than takes it away.
And just really quickly, for the how do people find this? Where do they go to get access to the Plainview Project for themselves?
The database is available at plainviewproject.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Emily Baker White. This is an amazing project, a vast undertaking, and we're really grateful for what you did. Everybody check that out. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at immigration and what both sides of the aisle are doing or have done about it. Don't go away. Not a week goes by without some new report about an atrocity committed by the Trump administration when it comes to immigration issues. And this week is no exception. Jacob Soboroff and Julia Ainslie from NBC report that there were botched family reunifications at the border involving children who were left in vans overnight because ICE was incompetent when it came to processing their reunification with their family. They say that 37 kids were promised a 30-minute ride in a van to go meet up with their family after they were separated by the president's policy. They were 5 to 12 years old. And then, as the report says, not until 39 hours later, after two nights in a van, did the last child step out of a van to be reunited. Most spent at least 23 hours in the vehicle. And I mean, just when you hear that, JR, what is your reaction?
Well, you try and put yourself in their position, right? You know, so you remember, and they talked about the ages of the kids ranging from, I think, 5 to 12.
Yeah.
Oh, man, look at that memory.
You're so good.
So from 5 to 12, you have kids in this van that are sitting there and first off have been separated from their families. So we talked about that, and that was one of two things from this administration that actually made Republicans step out and say, yeah, I'm against this.
Yeah.
More than one of them. So of all the atrocities, I'm putting in those terms so you can realize this is also across the lines of people that have bowed down and kissed the ring of Donald Trump. They previously hated him from the Republican Party. So you know it must be over the top. So we start there with kids that have been separated in the first place and they were against. So now these children who probably think they're never gonna see their parents again in a foreign country, speaking languages maybe they don't know, now they're like, oh, you've got the promise of after however long being reunited with your parent. Now we're going back to the trauma of your mental state, what you think these strangers are doing to you. Remember being lost in a store at 6 years old?
Yeah.
Maybe you wandered down the wrong aisle in Target? And your mother's in the next aisle and you lost your mind. Oh my God, I'm not gonna see you again. So imagine being separated from your mother for however long, months, and then getting the promise by someone who's grabbed your hand, the stranger that kidnapped you, has grabbed your hand and said, hey, I'm gonna take you back to your mom. And now you're stuck in a van with these strangers for two or three straight days.
Right, the kidnapper who said, oh, and so even Republicans are mad, as JR said. Republican Representative Greg Walden of Oregon said, now to learn that the children as young as 5 years old were left in vans for more than 24 hours is simply indefensible. I support enforcement of our nation's borders, but I strongly believe that children should not be separated from their parents, period. And those separated should be cared for as if they were our own children until they are reunified with their parents. This is not who we are as Americans. And just in that statement, those that are separated should be cared for as if they were our own children. How about those that aren't separated are cared for as if they are your own children? Because they're children. And that's the thing. Oh, suddenly because you've separated them from their parents, you think, oh, these are people now. Before that, they were just cattle coming across the border, as far as you were concerned, to come take your job. But it is this kind of stuff that happens time and time again that frustrates me so much. Just what it takes for empathy to kick in.
There's another part of that. Greg Walden from Oregon,
yeah.
The Republican. We're talking about Republicans, and they're finally realizing this is one thing that's apparently bad enough for them to speak out against. But even in that statement, he has to give this disclaimer. Back to that same graphic with Walden. He goes, I support enforcement of our nation's borders, but I strongly believe that the children should not be separated. So even in talking about it, you have to say, hey, Mr. Trump, I want to make sure you know, just because I don't want these children to be traumatized the rest of their lives, which is too late already, just because I'm against that trauma, us putting them through this, doesn't mean that I don't support enforcing our borders. What does enforcing our borders have to do with traumatizing children? Absolutely nothing. But you have to put that disclaimer in because we've brainwashed enough people to think, hey, I know how we can enforce our borders. Destroy children's lives.
Yeah.
That's great. That works. Those two things correlate.
And this report's so good because it also outlines the kind of disarray that's happening behind the scenes. They got their hands on some internal communications between a nonprofit that was hired by the government to kind of coordinate not necessarily not the processing at all, but the transportation itself. Andrew Carter, who works for BCFS, he's a regional director, wrote an email to his boss saying the children were initially taken to the facility, but were then returned to the van as the facility was still working on paperwork. The children were brought back in later in the evening. But returned to the vans because it was too cold in the facility and they were still not ready to be processed in. So that's it. Like every single thing about that shows the gross incompetence. He continues in the email, there has to be a better process. I hope as we move forward, there can be adjustments so that we don't put tender age kids in this position. So not only were they like, yeah, it's fine, bring them over here. The report also says that as that's happening, they told the people at ICE who were supposed to go ahead and process these kids who are being reunified, but everybody's just still clocking in and out as normal. And then when they get in the facility's too cold for children. And so they're like, you know, you're kind of up a creek and you're running a total crap show when the van is the best option for a place to keep a kid.
Yeah, and then you know, and so okay, so BCFS, the company that I think is a third party company that was busing these children to make sure they were reunited, they were scrambling and thinking, oh, this is a disaster. We've got however many kids in this van. Here, let's call back to whatever processing location where we had them and bring more vans because these children can't sleep here for the night. So they're trying to accommodate to a certain degree as possible because they did realize how cold it was in there while ICE officials and employees are leaving and clocking out and saying, hey, see you later. I'm going to go home and have a beer. So this is how incompetency runs from the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
So when you have no plan in place, if your thought is, hey, all these migrants are running across the middle of the country, relocating from one country, crossing through to another just to get here. They're coming here, and I have no other way to deter them. This is what your president says. Let's start separating them from their families because they're all walking with smartphones, watching CNN and saying, hey, the president just separated several thousand families from their kids. Hey, let's turn around and go back because our crime spree can't start here like we're planning. Think about the comic, the cartoonish approach to that policy. These folks are going to know that you're separating families so it's a deterrent while they're in the middle of the damn desert with their kids trying to run from something else that's destroying their lives. But you think that's going to deter them? And then once they get here, you do it anyway and have no plan in place because the plan was they'll hear about it because they tweet. And after they hear about it, they'll turn around. That was the plan. That was the extent of it. And after they did it, they didn't have a plan to complete because they didn't have one.
And now the plan is to put tariffs on Mexico to destroy their economy, to make it more likely that people will stay in Mexico.
But no matter how many cartoonish policies he comes up with, we take all of them seriously. So this next one, you're talking about the tariffs. Somehow some people are believing that that makes any kind of sense or that it relates to this issue.
It's rough. What are the Democrats doing during all of this? Well, they're passing the DREAM Act. Here's what it looked like on the floor of the House when the vote was taken.
On this vote, the yeas are 237, the nays are 187. The bill is passed. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted of this moment today, after years of GOP refusal, the House finally voted on the DREAM Act under a Democratic majority. The moment when it passed was like a rock concert. The people's cheers brought many, many members to tears. The vote was 237 to 187. And seven Republicans in the House joined 230 Democrats in voting for the bill. No Democrats voted against the measure. So this is what the Democrats are doing. Yeah. At the same time that the Republicans are trying to, I don't know, they're technically trying to tariff immigration.
Yeah, I looked at a few of the responses to AOC. I always like to see what people have to say. And actually just pointed that this is a simple tweet. We celebrated, we passed something that actually works for Americans, or folks that are looking to become Americans and also be a part of the system. Then they're like, oh, they're pilfering from our system. They're taking from our emergency services, going from Social Security. What's the truth on that?
Yeah, so Andrea Valdez is just, I also looked through the comments and she says, we do pay taxes. So she ostensibly is someone who's receiving DACA, which is also protected under this bill. DACA recipients have to have work permits that allow us to work in the US legally. We also have to put money into Social Security and Medicare that, by the way, we have no right to because we don't have residency or citizenship, even though we have worked hard for that money. The other things that this gives is, you know, a pathway to citizenship. It would give if it isn't going to die in the Senate, and there was already a promise of veto from the president, but it would it would essentially provide a pathway to citizenship for hundreds of thousands of people. Provided that they follow the rules, the very strict rules, just to give you some of them. It would grant, I think I have it here. To be eligible, immigrants must have been younger than 18 when they came to the US. They must have lived in the US continuously over 4 years. They must also have an American high school diploma and GED and pass a background check. Those who have committed serious crimes would be ineligible to be placed on a pathway to citizenship under the bill. These young immigrants must earn a college degree or complete 2 years of a degree program in an institution of higher education. And the list goes on and on. So it's not like what they're characterizing it as is a free for all.
And again, the main reason this is a problem is because this was done under the Obama administration. And of course, this administration has to undo everything that was done there without looking into the strict guidelines that were put in place. Honestly, if you hate immigrants, if you hate the dreamers that are coming in, if you hate the DACA program, you should actually like it because they're putting in way more into our system monetarily and energy wise than they're getting back out of it. You should love using these folks. You should love using people that are giving their lives and we're reaping the benefits. You should be all about this because they're going through, as you talk about, these strict guidelines just to become citizens, and many of them won't even necessarily get that chance. We should be all about this if you hate them.
Yep. We got to take a break. When we come back, is there going to be some justice served for the victims of Parkland? So the resource officer who was on duty during the Parkland shooting has been arrested and charged with various counts. Peterson, 56, named Scott Peterson, was charged with 7 counts of child neglect, 3 counts of culpable negligence, and 1 count of perjury after a Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigation. Apparently, as the report goes, he has been charged criminally after it was discovered through an investigation that he hid for 48 minutes during the Parkland shooting and didn't really do anything whatsoever. Politico reports the investigation into his response concluded that the career lawman, quote, did absolutely nothing to stop a gunman from walking into the South Florida campus and opening fire. So they are going to press criminal charges against him related to the shooting. What do you think about that, Justice?
It's tough because I read through some of this and I'm never going to question the pain of someone who lost someone, especially their kid, that closely. So some parents are in support of this. That's what I was looking for. I said, who that is actually affected by this are in support of this? Because I can be for or against it. I didn't lose anyone that day, you know? And one of them was saying, yeah, he's getting what he deserves. And he has a right to that opinion. I just wonder, we're looking to make sure this doesn't happen more. We're looking at a position that Peterson was put into in this situation and how much he was supposed to be prepared to handle this. I'm not sure how many lives he could have saved if he ran in front of it and gotten killed himself.
Yeah.
Or what position he was in that whole scenario in the first place. So I think you have to go through all this and I can respect the opinions of a lot of people who want criminal charges put on this guy. But when you put criminal charges on someone, the point is supposed to keep further incidents like this from happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's law enforcement or criminal charge is supposed to be a deterrent to crime.
Yeah, it is.
So the next one at the school in Nebraska, the law enforcement official sitting there, is he supposed to go, I remember what happened to Scott Peterson.
It's such a tough position to be in. I feel like at the very least some kind of civil punitive charges, but I don't know how that relates to like.
He was neglectful on his job.
But like there's criminal.
I don't know, maybe it was a crime thing. I don't know what the law basis is in Florida for something like
that. So here's what his lawyer says. So the charges levied against Peterson are a quote, thinly veiled attempt at politically motivated retribution, according to his Joseph DeRuzzo, who's his lawyer. Saying blame for the shooting falls squarely on Nicholas Cruz, the shooter who is facing multiple murder charges. We will vigorously defend against these spurious charges that lack basis in law and fact. So it seems like In law, I don't know about it, but in fact, it seems like in fact he did just sit there and do nothing, and he was in a position to do something about it. We're going to skip ahead to the statement from Fred Guttenberg, who's been on this show and has done an amazing job of raising awareness, of getting political action to prevent further instances like this from happening again. He says about this guy, you could have saved some of the 17 who died, 17 more were injured. You could have saved my daughter, Jamie. You did not, and then you lied about it, and you deserve the misery coming your way. So he also said that he should rot in hell. Like, I get it. And if the law says that he should be held criminally liable, at the very least, there should be some kind of responsibility. Typically, these kinds of, from my familiarity with the law, like these kinds of things, you if you're partially liable, there are ways that the law applies.
I just wonder how the law applies to being negligent on the job.
But I get it. Weird, but I mean, if he, you know, if you're in the military and you have a dereliction of duty, then you do get punished. And in this situation,
let's try and find a way to prevent these situations from happening rather than punishing the guys who are in a murderous situation. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at Trump's most recent interview with Piers Morgan and then this sagging pants law in Louisiana. Don't go away. We'll be back. The president of the United States went to the United Kingdom for a state visit, and during that, he spoke with Prince Charles. And in a recent interview with Piers Morgan, he said, we were just going to have a 15-minute chat, and it turned out to be an hour and a half. And he did most of the talking, and he is really, really into climate change. And I think that's great. I totally listened to him. And he also talked about art architecture. I love the, like, I totally listened to him. That's what I say when I listen to him. Oh, I listened to him, yeah.
But when your wife says, are you listening to me? And you go, oh, totally. I'm totally listening to you. That's exactly the words you use.
But like the takeaways that Trump had about climate change were amazing. Here is part of the interview.
What he really wants and what he really feels warmly about is the future. Mm. He wants to make sure future generations have climate that is good climate as opposed to a disaster. And I agree. I did mention a couple of things. I did say, well, the United States right now has among the cleanest climates there are based on all statistics, and it's even getting better because I agree with that. I want the best water, the cleanest water, crystal clean. Has to be crystal clean.
What people want to hear?
Oh my God, he's an idiot.
He wants climate that is good climate as opposed to bad or disaster.
It's like they invented the language, they know how to use it, and our president has no clue. What is crystal clean? Clear? Crystal clear? Clean as a whistle.
Did you know that America has a better climate than Canada?
Yeah,
it has a better climate than China.
Well, it's certainly cleaner.
Our climate is the best climate in the world because we've coordinate our climate to be best.
What is a clean climate? What is a clean? That is not, the unit of climate is not cleanliness at all. That doesn't make any sense.
It's when they go down into the coal mines and they pull out the climate and they clean it.
Yeah, we really, really clean the climate and put it back. Like, what are you talking about? I wonder if Prince Charles during it, I mean, that's where I go back to the point where he's like, oh, I totally listened to him. And then I said, our climate is clean. Our climate is clean, so we have clean air, water? That doesn't make any sense. Here is more of the interview.
Do you personally believe in climate change?
I believe that there's a change in weather, and I think it changes both ways. Don't forget, it used to be called global warming. That wasn't working. Then it was called climate change. Now it's actually called extreme weather. Mm. Because with extreme weather, you can't miss. Look, we have a thing now in tornadoes. I don't remember tornadoes in the U.S. to the extent. But then when you look back, 40 years ago, we had the worst tornado binge that we've ever had. In the 1890s, we had our worst hurricanes, and I would say we've had some very bad hurricanes. Were you able to?
What is he talking about?
There was very fine climate on both sides, is what it sounded like. Climate changes in both ways. It gets hot, it gets cold. And he remembers there used to be tornadoes, but there's also no tornadoes.
So since the terminology has changed, as he's pointing out, you know, global warming to climate change to now extreme weather, because you can't change extreme weather. I have an idea. How about you talk to those things called scientists that have been telling you from the beginning what it is, instead of you listening to Fox and Friends telling you what it is from the beginning? So the point where people have to keep changing the terminology for idiots like you to maybe get it, but really you're not ever going to get it because you don't want to. If you talk to maybe these guys who are doing the work, men and women that are doing the work and have told us about this decades ago, then maybe you'll get it. It's not about you just coming in like, since I came in office, they came with this whole thing called this climate thing. Man, atmosphere, never heard of that.
Oh my God. And in the meantime, all he's doing, he literally, to reduce the deaths associated with climate change, he A, has forbidden like long-term studies of climate. And in addition to that, he's just changed what you consider like a death due to climate change. It's ridiculous. There's more of this. Here's the last clip where he talks about what impressed him most about Prince Charles.
Has he moved you a little bit?
I'll tell you what moved me is his passion for future generations. Mm-hmm. He's really not doing this for him. He's doing this for future generations. He really feels, and this is real. He believes that. He wants to have a world that's good for future generations.
Do you want that?
And I do too. And that really, isn't he that? Mm-hmm. You know, he's Prince Charles. He doesn't have to worry about future generations in theory. Unless he's a very good person who cares about people. And that's what impressed me maybe the most, his love for this world.
Wow. That he cares about people and future generations. Just leave it. We're going to leave it right there. We got to get on to this last story. 12 years ago, the city of Shreveport, Louisiana passed a law kind of outlawing sagging pants. And 12 years later, they took a look at the effects of it, and here they are. Since the law against wearing pants below the waistline passed 12 years ago, a total of 699 black men were arrested for sagging, while 12 white men were arrested. Adding the 13 black women to the number of black men arrested gave a total of 712 black people out of 726 arrests. The total number of white people was 13, including one woman and 12 men. Black people made up 98% of the arrests for wearing pants below the waistline. And in Shreveport, Louisiana, the data I found was black people make up only 54% of the population.
Well, let me tell you what the racists would say. Black people sag their pants more than white people. It's just based off the numbers. The same thing they do with everything when it comes to indiscriminate policing or biased policing, especially on something like sagging pants. You know who sags their pants? Everyone.
I do. Hey, I do.
I didn't want to tell the whole audience this, but I've seen Brett's ass.
Yeah, and I apologize. The other day I was in the control room and I like leaned up against the wall and I was cold because my pants were so low that they were touching the drywall. But like the decision, oh gosh, it's just that black people sag their pants. Why are you arresting people for having low pants?
Exactly. You know why? Because they figure black folks do it more, or it was more connected to black folks. So like, hey, this is a good way for us to target certain members of society. It's another way of the broken, the broken headlight thing or the cracked windshield. Pull you over and be like, let me check out your car. Oh, there's something there wrong. Now I can investigate everything else about you because I know you got something going on.
It is essentially like making a law being like, it's going to be okay for me to arrest people I'm racist against.
Absolutely.
That's it. You know what else? It's not just the pants, because that's ambiguous. As we found out that we arrested 12 white people, they clearly weren't doing anything wrong. So how about we just outlaw having darker skin?
I want you to let's mix this with we spoke earlier. I don't want to blank on her name. Emily Baker White earlier with the Plainview Project, where the Plainview Project is talking about they put forward public posts from Facebook posts from police officers and their approach to policing. And a lot of times it's aggressive, violent, and pretty much fatal. Mm-hmm. So put that together with them having the power to then police certain folks based off of how they're wearing their clothing. And then their mindset there. And after someone says, hey, get off my back, I'm wearing my pants, bro. Imagine how they might react to this. So you put this all together and it's an atom bomb of violence and anger from the most violent anger of our society. With a gun in their hand.
The Shreveport, so City Councilwoman Livette Fuller wants to abolish the law. At least three national news outlets reported on Fuller's proposal in connection with the death of Anthony Childs that occurred during an officer-involved shooting. Here is a little excerpt from the article. Forensic evidence showed SPD officer Travion Brooks fired 8 shots, 3 of which hit 13-year-old Anthony Childs. Childs shot 1 bullet into his own chest. That was the shot that killed him, according to the coroner. It's just...
So you can be mad about how this guy, because then this particular case, when the guy ran and the police ran around and he said, hey, drop the gun and shot him and the whole shootout happened. None of that starts, there's the victim. None of that starts unless they're trying to stop a guy for sagging his pants.
Yeah. So ridiculous and so terrible. So anyhow, we leave you with that. Thank you, JR. JR Wednesdays, always a good show, let's be honest.
I'm leaving angry.
We'll see you tomorrow on the Damage Report.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Arola. I'll see you soon.